just want to tell you what Maror Makomos you should have received. There are two different parts to the Maror Makomos. The first pages that you got are the Ramban at the beginning of Parshas Shoftim, and the subject of that Ramban is the relationship between setting up courts and Eretz Yisrael, a relationship which ostensibly doesn't really make sense. The need for justice is universal. It should apply in Chutz Laaretz just as well as it does in Eretz Yisrael, and yet the Ramban is going to make a distinction. And he'll argue with the Rambam. Bli Neder, we'll see that. The second pages that you got, two pages, is from an article that I found on the internet, also on Shoftim V'Shotrim, from Rabbi Yeshua Pfeffer. And this article, which is called Hashfitah V'Bitzua, addresses the issue of two different branches of government, as we know them, the judiciary and the executive. The judiciary, of course, are in charge of making decisions, handing down verdicts, and that's called shoftim in the Torah's language, or shofet in singular. And then we have the executive, which means implementing the judgment and the verdict that was handed down by the shofet, and that's called the mitzvah of shotrim, of setting up shotrim. And we really want to analyze the relationship between those two. I'm going to begin the Shia now with the second part of the Maror Makomos I sent you, namely this article, this essay, which I find quite fascinating. What we're going to learn about in this essay is that the Jewish system, the Torah perspective, is somewhat different than universal, shall we call it, secular or general judiciary executive government. So we're going to do what we call compare and contrast. I find it fascinating that on the one hand, the Torah system of justice, which is millennia old, is so similar to what we have today in a modern Western country, which assumes a fundamental distinction between the judiciary and the executive. On the other hand, the Torah sees a much closer relationship between those two branches than secular law will see. And we're going to even get a chance to take a look at a decision that was handed down by the Supreme Court of the State of Israel, which of course reflects not the Torah perspective, but the Western and universal perspective. So what we're looking at is Parshas Shoftim in Sefer Dvarim, Perek Tezayin, Pasuk Yudches, Shoftim v'Shotrim, Titein Lecha B'chol Sharecha, Asher Hashem Elokecha Nosein L'chol Shvatecha. And V'Shoftu Asa'am Mishpat Tzedek. We'll read the English translation. Judges and officers shall you appoint in all your cities which Hashem your God gives you for your tribes, and they shall judge the people with righteous judgment. That's what we have in the opening pasuk of this week's parasha. Now, the first statement that we want to make here is the following. In Parsha Shoftim, we learn of what I call different agencies. In Hebrew, it's called Rishayot, Rishuyot. And these agencies operate in Israel after the Bnei Israel reached the land of Israel. And what we're going to see is that amongst these different agencies and powers, there's the Melech, and then there's the Navi, and then there's the Kohanim, and finally we have the Shoftim and the Shotrim. All these come into office and are appointed after the land is conquered and settled. That means following what we call Yerusha V'Yeshiva, the 14 years in the case of Yoshua, in which he conquered the land. There would be mitzvos that would apply to the assembly, the congregation of Israel, that did not apply until that point, because until that point we were just Yechidim, we were individual. Now we have our own land, And the Torah defines various roles and provides the basic rules for these agencies. The parsha begins, of course, with judges and officers, and these are the shoftim and the shotrim. We have to define exactly what are the respective roles of the shoftim and the shotrim. Rashi points out at the beginning of Parsha Shoftim that the shotrim, the officers, harodim es ha'am, they are in charge of enforcing the law. In other words, the responsibility that's entrusted in the hands of the officers is the responsibility of what we would call the rod and the strap. Rashi says, Chovtim b'makalot, makel, which means a rod, and those are the utensils of the shotrim, which are used for anyone, l'chol misha eino shomea, for anyone who doesn't implement the decision of the shoftim. So we have a clear-cut division between the shoftim, the utensils, or if you will, the kelim of the shoftim are the Torah itself and the Mesorah. They're going to use their intellect, and they need someone or some agency that will enforce the law. And which agency will enforce the law? And how do they do so? These are the shotrim. Rashi says, b'makel uberitzua, with a rod and a strap. And they will force the people to accept the ruling of the judge, kol mi she'eino shomer. Having learned the Rashi at the beginning of the parasha, we want to take a look at the opening Rambam in Hilchos Sanhedrin, Perek Aleph, Halach Aleph. The Rambam is going to add another perspective to what we've already seen in Rashi, especially with regard to the officers, the shotrim. The Rambam says that the shotrim, nimunim, are appointed and they oversee af al hashmira v'al seder atziburi. They're in charge, they're responsible for maintaining public order. So that's a general rule that goes beyond the relationship to the shofet at this point. Again, we'll discuss this later, b'li neder. And the Rambam also adds another point, and that is not only are they responsible for maintaining public order, but they also have to see to it to distance the people from sin. Minias asias averos. And here's the language of the Rama, mitzvah haseishel Torah, lemanos shoftim v'shotrim b'chol medina u'medina u'b'chol pelach u'pelach. That means that every Eretz Yisrael is divided up into three medinot. That's called Eivar Yarden and Golil and Yehuda. Each medina will need its, shall we say, a supreme court, and within each medina will have to set up a court at the Pelach Upelach, which means in each province. So we're going to divide up each Medina into a smaller section geographically that's called a Pelach, or a province. And each province will have to have its own high court. We're going to later on see that the Rambam adds ear for ear, that every city within each Pelach, in this third subdivision, will need its own Minui Shoftim. And then the Rambam, after quoting the pasuk that opens our parsha, he says, "Shotrim elu baale makel uritzua," that we already saw in Rashi, "heim omdim lifnei adayonim," and that again reflects what we saw in Rashi, that they will enforce the decision of the shoftim. But here the Rambam adds, "vamesavavim b'shvakim," they will in effect make the rounds in the marketplaces where the people are there. And what will they do? Uberchovos, they'll go into the roads, v'alachanuyos, and into the stores, l'taken hasha'arim v'hamidos. So the Rambam says that the responsibility of the executive of the Shotrim extends even to regulation of prices. This is fascinating. So not only are they patrolling the marketplaces and the streets to make sure that people are observing the law, but they're also inspecting the stores that are selling and make sure that their prices are fair prices. This is the parasha of Onah, that we're not allowed to overcharge our clients. And the Rambam says they will patrol the marketplaces, they will enter into the stores, regulate the prices and the measures. The Rambam adds the word midos. And the midos were used in those times to weigh things, because if you wanted to buy a pound of potatoes, it was crucial that the measures were accurate. And then the Rambam says, ulahakos kol miaves. Anyone who deviates from the law will be handled physically by the Shotrim. So it means that they, the Shotrim, will use these, as we said before, these utensils, and they will inflict punishment. I guess you could call it physical or corporeal punishment on the offenders. And then the Rambam gives a general rule, v'chol ma'aseim al pi adayonim. All the deeds of the Shotrim are controlled by the judges. Now, that might mean two things. It might mean that they need the judges to instruct them, but it also might mean that they need the judges to verify, and the judges have the veto power to undermine the decision of the Shotrim. So ultimately, the Shotrim owe their responsibility, what we might call in Hebrew shibud, you know, they are mishubadim to the shoftim. But it doesn't exclude the fact that the Shotrim will take initiative as they enter into the stores, the marketplaces, the various roads, and they maintaining public order, and as we said before, to distance people from sin. The Medrash Tanchuma emphasizes these two roles of the Shoftim and the Shotrim respectively, quoting Rabbi Lazar, "Im ein shoter ein shofet." In other words, the shofet needs the shoter. Without the enforcement officers, they cannot be a judge. And why is that so? Why is the judge powerless? Ketzad kevan shenischayev adam bebezdin l'chavero, im ein shoter shiyotzi memenu. In other words, the decision of the shofet could be handed down and you find a person guilty, but nevertheless that person leaves the courtroom and the judge is absolutely powerless to see to it that the law is enforced. For that they need, or we could say they're dependent upon, the Shotrim. Im ein shoter shiyotzi mimenu, the shoter is the one who's going to enforce and make sure that people observe the verdict and implement it. Kevon sheporesh min adayin ein sveka biyadu, he's not capable, this dayan, of doing anything to the person once he leaves the courtroom. Elohim came mosro biyad ha-shoter va-shoter motzi mimenu. So these enforcement officers will take control because the judge at this point is powerless. Okay, let me just stop and see if there are any questions here. I don't see any questions in the chat, but if anyone wants to turn on their, you know, their microphone, that's fine. And if not, let's really get into the sugya. Okay. The next section is the kishkis of what we want to discuss today in this essay. And that is the relationship between these two agencies, the judges and the officers. We know that each have their particular authority, their role of responsibility. They don't interfere with each other. On the contrary, they work in tandem, and they each perform their own specific duty. And again, this is something that we're familiar with in Western law, the distinction, the division between the judges, the judiciary, and the officers, the executive. So at first glance, the Torah, again, is not reflecting what we know. I guess we would say the opposite around. The Torah came way before Western civilization. But in any event, at this point there's going to be a splitting of the road. And the Torah is going to go in its particular direction, which fundamentally means that there's going to be some sort of overlap between the Shofet and the Shoter. In other words, the relationship between the judiciary and the executive in the Torah perspective is much closer than it is in secular law. L'mashal, and the first example we want to give, is the possibility that the judge who paskins, in other words, he hands down his verdict, he himself yivatzea et psak hadin bi'atzmo ubimo yadav, which means that he himself will execute the law. And we're going to see that this is based on a sugya in Sanhedrin, especially the way the Shach interprets that sugya in Choshen Mishpat Simon Chafed. What is the terminology that's coined by the Gemara in Sanhedrin Lamed Gimel? It's called Nosa V'Nosan Biyad. How do we translate that? It's very difficult to translate that. And the Shach says, what it means is that there's a tviya, there's a claim of the defendant against, I'm sorry, of the plaintiff against the defendant. There's a tviya of the tovea against the nitba, and it is the executive, the shofet, that is going to activate means of executing the law. That procedure is called nasa v'nasan biyah. The Chazon Ish embellishes it. Says the Chazon Ish, which you'll see, I believe, in the second paragraph, he says that there are indirect methods of coercion that can be activated by the dayanim. One such thing he calls cherem, or excommunication, meaning if the nidon refuses to fork over the money, let's say, then the shofet can declare that that nidon is put into cherem or into nidui, and that's called nasa v'nasan biyat. That's a very powerful tool in the hands of the shofet. And moreover, this concept of taking from one and handing over to the other expresses itself in a different methodology, which is mentioned by the Sefer Tumim, that's Rabbi Yonasan Ivershitz. And that is that the shofet, through the power of agency, what we call shlichus, uses the shoter to implement the law. And according to the Tumim, that's called nasa v'nasan biyat. Because Shlucho Shalom Kimoso, and basically the Shoter, as the Shliach of the Shofet, is the extension of the arm of the Shofet. Let's see exactly how this Nasa V'Nasan Biyad expresses itself in practical terms. And here I want you to see the paragraph that starts, Bitzua Shel Bezdin. And the question again that we're addressing is, can the judges execute that judgment? Number one, they can do so in Nasa V'Nasan V'Yad by actually taking the money from one party and giving it over to the other party. That's called Netilah Fizit. They can also do what's called Bitchonot. They can require that the party that has to pay offers securities that will guarantee that he will pay up his debt, because if he doesn't, then these securities will be taken away from him. That's another form in which the shofet can force the implementation of the law and, shall we say, express an executive agency. And that's called, in the parlance of the Batei Dinim, kfias hachayav, to enforce the law. For example, there's something called a tzav beitin l'knisa l'rshut hachayav. Beitin can issue a court order, this is issued by the Shoftim, which gives license to the Shotrim to enter into the domain, the private property of the Mischayev, and confiscate his possessions. Okay? Even moreover, and this is the most radical, perhaps, form of the Bitzua Shel Bezdin, of the executive power of the Shofet, is that he can incarcerate the person who refuses to pay up, let's say in a monetary case. Furthermore, he could do what's called ikul. Ikul means confiscation of property. And kviat sidre piron. He can set up an arrangement called a payment schedule. That is the license or the power of a shofet to determine. Let's say if he says that Shimon has to pay Ruvay $1 million, but Shimon doesn't have that kind of funds at this point, he will set up an arrangement where Shimon will pay, let's say, you know, $100,000 every month or whatever, and pay it up over the course of 10 months. And sometimes Beis Din will actually decide what's called ribui noshim, meaning which, let's say, for example, Shimon owes money to a number of different people. The shofet can determine who will get first dibs and who will be paid first. He'll set up a whole arrangement of payment, a payment schedule. So there are security options. And if you look at the bottom of your page one, there's something called a shtar shel hotzah b'poal, which means that Beis Din can sign a document which allows the shotrim to do whatever they have to do to implement the law and the decision. And we're moving on, if you're following me, to page two, which would be the fourth of the four pages I sent you. Now, we spoke about the utensils of the shotrim, and not only that, but the Tur, in his opening presentation in Choshe Mishpat Siman Aleph, says that the Dayanim, meaning the judges who sit in Beis Din, they also hold on to utensils. That's very fascinating. He says, Klei HaDayanim. And what are these Klei HaDayanim? So he quotes a statement of Rabbi Yirmiyah. Rabbi Yirmiyah says, Asher tosim lifneihem. Lifneihem means in front of the dayanim. Asher talamdem, and they will use it to implement justice. That's asher tosim lifneihem. It should have said asher talamdem, because basically the shofet is paskening, he's teaching, it's a guidance based on halacha. Elo, what does it mean asher tosim lifneihem? What is going to be placed in the presence of the Shoftim? And that is four things: Makel, Uritsua, Minol, Vishofar. Each one of these has its own use. So for example, the Makel is the stick, and the Shofar, by the way, is used for excommunication, for Cherem, if it's required. And then the Ritsua is used to give lashes, and the Shofar, as we said before, those blasts indicate excommunication. And all these are in the power of the shofet. He says, Lamaisa, it's very possible that even according to the Tur, the dayanim are not going to actually do these things. These will be carried out by the officers, by the shotrim, not by the dayanim themselves. But the fact that these instruments are lifneihem, they're in the presence of the shoftim, that itself indicates a very close connection between the judgment of the shofet and the execution of the shoter. Meaning, the judges share a very heavy measure of responsibility to execute their judgment. So there's a close connection here between the judiciary and the executive. And in contrast, we look at what's called the Beit HaMishpat HaModerni, which is the court in a modern context, and there the courts want to ensure and guarantee that there'll be an absolute clear-cut separation between the judiciary and the executive. And here he quotes a decision of the Israeli Supreme Court, and they write the following. This is in the decision that they handed down. Bitsua psak hadin, the implementation or the execution of the verdict, eino mitafkidov hashiputim shel Beit HaMishpat. That goes beyond the purview and the territory of the courts. The courts have nothing to do whatsoever with the execution of a decision. They just make the decision. Now their responsibility is completely removed from them. And that's why lekach l'shem kach hukma hotza'a l'fo'al, this is why the responsibility is now given to the executive, to the officers, and that's why it was established. And they end with the phrase v'advarim muvanim. This is self understood, and this is from a court case between the Intercontinental Hotel and a fellow by the name of Rutt. In any event, hotza'a l'fo'al, which really means exactly how the decision of the court is going to be implemented, that's out of the hands of the court itself and given to the hands of the shotrim, of the executive. You would never find such a phrase in the Torah. The Torah, although it separates between the judge and the shoter, nevertheless, that separation is not so sharp. And as we said before, we often find a very close involvement of the dayanim in the execution of their own judgment. And if this be the case, Rabbosai, we're ready for an afkamina l'maisa. And this is going to be a fundamental difference between halacha, the Torah perspective, and the secular universal one. And that is when the judge makes a mistake, an error in his verdict. And let's say the error was done in a monetary case, and it's irreversible. The money is gone. And the question here is whether the judges share any monetary responsibility under the laws of Nezikin. Meaning if they were how do you say in English, poshea, they were negligent in handing down this fall, this mistaken decision, can the person who suffered the monetary loss demand compensation from the judges themselves? I mean, you realize that that has tremendous implications, because who would want to sit on a judge of a case of significant funds knowing that if he can be proven to have made a mistake, he'll have to make up for that from his own pocket. Now, there's a little bit of a typo here. Be'ofen she'ta'a, it should say in the second paragraph. Dayan b'psikoko binyan mamon. So the dayan made a mistake in his verdict in a monetary case. Ukvari efshal etaken et ha'ma'oves. And that financial loss is irreversible. Nechluku aposkim in choshen mishpat simen chafhei. We're going to have a machlokes as to whether or not the dayan is liable to compensate the party who suffered financial damage as a result of his error. And according to one opinion, the poskim, the dayan is pater milshalem, he's alleviated from his responsibility, and that opinion is codified by the Shulchan Aruch himself. And why is he exempt? And the answer is because afal pisha garam lahasik, even though it's true that he was the cause of this financial liability, but nevertheless, lo niskaven lahazik, he didn't have intention to damage. Now, Rabbosai, as you and I know, that's a very difficult statement of the Mechaber, because the rule is, with regard to Nizke Adam, Adam Muad Liolam, a man is considered, whenever he causes damage, to be responsible, even if he did it unintentionally, even if his intentions were good, that's totally irrelevant. And therefore, the halach of Adam Mu'ad Li'olam should should kick in and apply to the case of a shofet. Sheta, what does the mechaber mean when he says lo niskaven lahazik? And the Sma, the Sefer Miaseinayim, one of the super commentaries on Shulchan Aruch Choshen Mishpat, is bothered by this, and he offers the following answer, which you'll see in a paragraph that starts Kedeli Yashev, and he writes that this is a separate Takonas Chachamim, that in truth the Dayan should be paying and compensating for this financial loss, but there was a Takonas Chachamim with the authority of the Chachamim through Hefker Bezdin Hefker that alleviated the Dayan of his responsibility, as long as, again, he did it with all good intentions. And the reason why they made this takana is because in Basal Chayaval of Lo Yodin Liolam, says the Sma, if you would implement the strict law of the Zikin of Adamu Liolam, no one would be willing to serve as a judge. It's just too risky from a financial possibility. So therefore they exempted him to pay these damages. That's the Mechaber. The Ramah claims that the opinion of the Mechaber is not universally accepted, and they yesh sovrim ki dayin sheta chayev l'shalim mikiso es nizkei ha-nezek ha-nizak. So again, even though the Ramah's opinion was not accepted by the more recent authorities, the later poskim, what we call the Gedolei Achronim, but nevertheless it's fascinating that according to the Ramah, we do not accept the exemption of Dayanim from paying damages. Now all this makes no sense, L'chor, because at the end of the day, who took the money from Reuven's pocket and gave it to Shimon? So for this we want to look at the Rush in Masechta Sanhedrin. The Rush says that we're talking about a case of Dayan Shahotzi Lefoal Es Psak Hadin Dainu Nasa V'Nasan V'Yada. Now the reason why, and this is again reflected in the Ramah, the Dayan should be paying is because the Dayan was actively involved in the execution of the judgment. In fact, the Shulchan Aruch might possibly agree that in this case of Nasa V'Nasan V'Yado, the Dayan would in fact have to pay. He didn't have to get directly involved in the execution of the judgment, but once he does so, then, as the Rush says it, when he's negligent, and he went and got directly involved in the execution of the judgment, as he surpassed his main role, which is to pass judgment, and although he has the authority to execute his own judgment, he wasn't obligated, it wasn't incumbent upon him to do so, when he voluntarily takes on the execution phase, he becomes negligent, and he has to pay damages. Which is absolutely fascinating, because if we assume that even the Mechaber would admit in this case, then we find a very clear nafkamina to the Torah's perspective, in which the judiciary can also at the same time decide to play the role as an executive to implement and execute the judgment. In doing so, they now take on the responsibility to pay for any negligence if they made a mistake. Klomar, chiyuvo shal adayin shenosa menosan biyad hu totzao shal rashlanut apshia, hadayin lo haya tzarich l'tarev bibitzu apsak hadin. No one coerced them to take on the role of the shotrim, but kevin shahasa came, then as a result, he now plays the role in directly causing the damage, and as a result, he doesn't have what's called chasinut, which means protection of the Takonis Chachamim. So the Takonis Chachamim, which the Mechaber codifies to protect the situation of the Dayan, that's only in a classical case where a Dayan played his role and lived up to his responsibility. He didn't go beyond that. If he decides on his own initiative to go beyond that, then he takes upon himself a certain responsibility. Now the exception to this rule is going to be a Dayan Mumcha. We'll get back to that in just one moment. But I just want to point out to you that herein lies a tremendous contrast between the Torah perspective and the secular law. The secular law doesn't accept any sort of responsibility for the judges, for the judiciary to pay anything. They have absolute immunity with regard to financial damages. In halacha, in Torah law, that's not so simple. And it could be a dayan shetoa has to pay. First of all, according to the Ramah, in a case where he made a toas. And secondly, according to even the Mechaber, in the case where he was nosav and nosav biyad, and he voluntarily took upon himself the execution phase of the judgment. Just, we skipped one paragraph here, and then we'll just summarize what we learned. And that's the case of an expert judge, a dayan mumche. He's always considered patur, according to everybody, even if he made a boo-boo and he was negligent. And not only that, even if he went as far as being nosev and nosev viyad, he was motzi psak dino lepoal, nevertheless, in all cases, he is exempt from payment. And why is that so? What's the explanation? The Shach, again in Simon Chaf Hei, offers the following explanation. A mumche has the right to assume that his decision is correct. And therefore, when he executes that decision, that's not called negligence. So again, your average judge is not considered a mumche. But if he has the status of a mumche, and he was appointed as the mumche of the Beis Din, which gives him total authority, and sometimes he's appointed by the tzibur of Klal Yisrael. Again, you have to know the laws of a yochid mumche, a dayan mumche. In whatever the case may be, once he serves as a dayan mumche, and you want to be mechayev him because he executed the judgment, the answer is he has every right to assume, and that's the faith that the halacha places in him, the tzibur places in him, that his decisions are the correct decisions. Hu rashoy la'amin shepsak dino emes v'sha'olav la'atzil oshuk miad oshko, and that's his responsibility. So let's just summarize this in the paragraph that starts Yitochen. I'm sorry, the paragraph that starts B'nevuas Yeshayo. We find a prophecy about the time of the Mashiach in Sefer Yeshayo. And there Yeshayo Anovi says that there actually will be a time in which there will no longer be shotrim. He says, Hashiva shofteinu kvar ishona v'yotzeinu kivat chila. We're all familiar with that from the davening. And the very fact that he omits any mention of officers, of shotrim, indicate that in future times there will be no need for policemen, for shotrim. And why is that so? Because what's our glorious vision, eschatological vision of the end of days? And that is that man will be absolutely dedicated to tzedek. There will be no need, ein lo tzorech l'shotrim she'achufas am el tzedek. What it means is that in future times there will be no selfishness, no one's going to want to take it away from somebody else. He makes a reference here to Zechariah Novi, Perek Yud Gimel, also foretells that beautiful selflessness in the future times. There will be no need for policemen to enforce the law. People will be righteous. They'll be totally dedicated to truth. The Dayana will issue their verdict, and the litigants will accept that verdict, and they will put it into practical implementation, and the Torah will be complete. So again, what this means is mikanon uroim. If you see the next to last paragraph, as ofi hamishni shal shotrim. To what extent are the officers secondary? They are mishnim. They are not primary, but they are tofel. When the dayan is incapable of enforcing the law, then he has to turn to the shotrim. Ultimately, we won't need any shotrim. We'll just need the shoftim to determine the law. And he ends here with a bracha. a tefillah that we should be zocha to see this speedily in our days. Let me take a pause here for questions. I have a question here from Chaim Besson, and Chaim is asking, in a case where a dayan is liable to pay, why would anyone become a dayan? Isn't it supposed to be a non-paying position? Well, if you will allow me, Chaim, I would just reformulate your question. I would say the following: if a dayan is liable to pay, then why would he go the step further and volunteer to be a nosei v'nosei b'yad? I mean, nobody forced him to do that. If he felt, for whatever reason, that he's going to do that, and he took money out of Reuven's hands and put it into Shimon's hands, that's adam mazik mamish. Okay. Now, we have just a few minutes left. What I want to do is give you an overview of the Ramban, which are the first two pages that I handed out. The Ramban first opens up by telling us that even though we've had already psukim, in this case in Parshas Mishpatim, in which the Torah commands us, Ad Elohim Yavo Dvar Shneim, that the judges will be dealing with the various claims, and Nosan Biflilim, people will pay based on the order and the decision of the judges. What? So we already have, by implication at least, a mitzvah to appoint judges. So why here in Sefer Dvarim, you know, the Ramban in his introduction to Sefer Dvarim says that all mitzvahs that are repeated in Sefer Dvarim have something to add. What is the Torah adding here about judges at the beginning of Parsha Shoftim? Says the Ramban, what the Torah is adding is that every city in Israel has to have judges. That's what he says, B'chol areim kasheyiten lahem Hashem ha'aretz. And he goes very far. He says, in chutz la'aretz, Einam chayovim lemanos beznim. There's no need to set up courts in chutz la'aretz. Aval kasheyitzak ha'ashuk, it's just when someone cries out for justice, he's been oppressed, then Yamdu Olav Haruyum Lishvot will set up a temporary court with judges that'll stand in judgment, Umishpatem Yishpatu, and they will adjudicate the claim according to their decision, their judgment. That's based on a pasuk in Yechezkel. Oh, the Ramban offers an alternative possibility, Yalel Aretz. If the Ashuk wants to, he can go up to Eretz Yisrael, Bismana, meaning at the time when there were judges in Israel, Visham Yishpitu, B'mokom HaMishpat, and there, in the courtroom, they will adjudicate his claim. V'hosif B'kan Shotrim. And now the Torah also adds the concept of Shotrim, V'heim Yu Nogsim B'dvar Mishpat, they will press the litigants to comply with the word of judgment that was issued by the court. So basically, the Ramban claims that in Chutz La'aretz we have a mitzvah of tzedek tirdof, but we don't have to set up dayanim because that mitzvah was given only in Eretz Yisrael. And this baffles the mind a little bit. I mean, if tzedek tirdof requires setting up courts, as we saw in Eretz Yisrael, why not apply that in Chutz La'aretz? El, what are you going to tell me? It's enough if we spontaneously gather together some judges to decide the case, so why not do that in Eretz Yisrael as well? There's no logical distinction, apparently, between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. And the Ramban summarizes his conclusion when he says, Ulefi zeh, ein Yisrael shebechutz la'aretz mitzuvim lemanos lem dayonim vayoros. He says that in Chutz La'aretz, there's not even a need to set up judges and courts in the cities. And he quotes the Rambam, who maintains that position at the very beginning of Hilchos Sanhedrin. But now the Ramban points out that if you look in Masechet Makis, the Braisa says something a little bit different. And the Braisa establishes that in Eretz Yisrael there's a Sanhedrin. In Chutz La'aretz, Melanisha said, "Hashem no hekis baaretz ubechutz laaretz." In game one, and then I show through the show to take the Kobachol Sharecha El Baaretz Ata Moshe Bechol Pelach U Pelach U Bechol Ear V Ear U Bechutz Laretz Ata Moshe Bechol Pelach Pelach V Ein Ata Moshe Bechol Ear V Ear. So basically, this psak of the Brisa maintains that even in Chutz Laretz there is Sanhedrin of 23 judges, and in although not. We would say in Lundish terms, the Machayev is not Arim, but rather Plachim, which means we don't have to establish a Sanhedrin in every single city in Chutz Laretz, but in every Pelach we have to do so. And the Ramban embellishes this by saying that according to the Braisa, the local ear to ear, that we are obligated to designate Sanhedrin outside of Eretz Yisrael, but not in each city, but rather in the province. Which basically means that in Chutz Laretz, you have to guarantee that there be a high court in a vast area, which is called the province, the Pelach. In Kena Mitzvah Zos Noheges Bechol Zman B'dini Mominis B'dvar Manidodim B'Chutz Laretz, that even in Chutz Laretz is a mitzvah to set up a court in every single Pelach, and they will be able to adjudicate in cases that deal with Dini Mominos, Ubidvar Manidonim B'Chutz Laretz, and other matters that can be decided in Chutz Laretz, like for example Knossos, or maybe Malkus. He says, "Avol bizman azeh," but this whole discussion in the Braisa is completely theoretical, because in our time, liakash batla smicha. Nowadays, there's no smicha, which means there's no ish mipiish going back as an unbroken chain to Moshe Rabbeinu. Is therefore kevon shekol amishpatim v'teilu min haTorah. The Torah doesn't allow any decision by judges other than smuchim. And that's based on a drasha. The pasuk says lifneim, and the Gemara in Gittin says lifneim v'lo lifnei hedyotos. Hedyotos means judges who are not ordained; they are not musmachim. They are what we call laymen, as far as the Torah is concerned. Vanan hedyotos anan, and we today no longer have smicha, and therefore we cannot function as shoftim. So the whole mitzvah of appointing shoftim is manazek can no longer apply. V'eina dayonim b'chutz laretz ela, he says, v'eina dayonim b'chutz laretz ela takana, the establishment of judges in chutz laretz today in our time is only a takanas chachamim d'shlichusayu avdinan. In other words, we are meant to act as agents of the shoftim in Eretz Yisrael, but einanu chayovim b'mitzvos minoy shoftim in haTorah klal. However, the mitzvah of appointing judges, that only applies to the Doraisa halacha of musmachim, to those who have smicha. So basically, we can summarize the Ramban as saying that mimonef shach, there's no mitzvah of minui dayonim in chutz laretz, either because in general there's no such mitzvah, and we will only spontaneously set up a beis din in chutz laretz according to the need of the hour, or if you assume that there is a mitzvah to appoint dayonim, b'chol pelach u'pelach, that would not apply today, because that's any authority that a Beis Din would have today is only by Takonis Chachamim, and therefore we can no longer fulfill this mitzvah of Minui Dayon. I would just like to conclude by asking the question, why in the perspective of Tzedek Tirdov should there be any difference between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laretz? If you take, for example, the Braisa, so you've got a situation where Tzedek Tirdov, in order to guarantee justice and the administration of justice, we have to set up Batei Dinim in the Plachim. If that be the case, then why not apply the same rule in Eretz Yisrael? Apparently, Rabosai, it's a radical chiddush here in the Ramban, and that is that appointing judges and setting up a Beis Din has an additional dimension to it. It's not just for the sake of justice, it's not just to be Mekayim in the midst of Tzedek Tirdov, but it also is for the sake of a different Kiyum HaMitzvah, and that's Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. When we set up a land of Israel and the settlement thereof, there are different dinim in Arim, in cities. You know, every city has to have a certain number of rofim and so forth, and it has to be this Ari Bati Chomad, you know, cities that are walled and surrounded by walls. There are dinim of Ari Miklad, there are Ari Levim. Bekitzar Maisel, Halach of an ear, what we call in Briska terminology, Chalashem ear, exists in Eretz Yisrael. We have to settle and set up Arim, cities. Says the Ramban, based on the Braisa, that Shoftim v'shotrim tidin l'chol b'chol sharech v'chol ear v'ear, that is the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. That every city should be equipped with Shoftim and Shotrim. That is how we fulfill the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So in Chutz Laaretz, you only have the mitzvah of Tzedek Tzedek Teredov. And that mitzvah can be achieved by plach uplach, whereas in Eretz Yisrael there's an additional dimension to the mitzvah, and that's Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. In addition to plach uplach, we're going to have to establish batei dinim in every ear, in every city. Okay, Rabosai, we'll stop here. I'm gonna.